Thanks for tuning in to the Upgraded Life podcast. In this episode, I'm going to bring you a conversation with Shanti Bennett and her husband, Jeremy Bennett. This is going to be somewhat of a variety show because Shanti is an artist and a healer, and Jeremy is a student of fire and a tracker. And together, they are working on a project that brings Shanti's art to the world of Web3 through NFTs. At the core of Shanti's art is a powerful story of addiction recovery, and you're going to hear all about that story in this episode. So buckle up and let's go for a ride on the Upgraded Life podcast.
Hello, thanks for tuning in to the Upgraded Life podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Sotelo. The Upgraded Life is my personal project where I help people realize and reach their potential. I've been a professional helper for 20 years. Here's what I'm convinced of. The life that you have right now and the life that you want tomorrow is a product of your personal mindset, mission, and movement. Each episode of the Upgraded Life podcast is going to give you something that you can do as soon as the episode is over to upgrade your personal mindset. Your mindset informs your mission. Your mission tells you how to move every single day. And together, that is the Upgraded Life.
All right. I am excited to be here again with another episode of the Upgraded Life podcast. And today, I'm going to be bringing you Shanti Bennett and Jeremy Bennett. These are two people, mostly Jeremy at this point, but in another week or so, I'm going to be able to meet Shanti in person as well. But these are two people that I have been getting to know more and more, especially over this past handful of months. They both have an exciting and powerful story to tell, and that's why I bring people on this show. I bring people here to tell their story, to share the power that's behind their story. And, you know, my angle here is mindset too. So be ready for a little bit of a mindset question towards the end. Nonetheless, I am excited for Jeremy and Shanti to be here. So I'm going to throw it over to them, let them do a little bit of an intro of who they are and what's going on and why it is that I brought them on the Upgraded Life podcast. So Jeremy and Shanti, go for it.
Hi, I'm Shanti. I'll tell you a little bit about me. I'm a mother of two boys that are 19. Wait, no, Raven's 20. 20 and 7, 18. Jeez. And I'm an artist. I've been in recovery for 24 years. So I got to raise those boys sober, which is really exciting and one of the best accomplishments that I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, I'm Jeremy, and you know, my job is a wildland firefighter. Kind of in a transition point in my life right now. I'm looking forward to being able to retire and move into another phase of my life within the next 5 years. I'm a father. I've been more recently getting into this whole crypto Web3 space and given kind of become Shanti's business manager in a sense for her art. And I really see a lot of opportunities for her art to get out there through this new platform. And I really like the idea of telling stories and the importance of a story for connection. And I've got a lot of other little things, little passion projects in the works. And so I'll leave it at that for now.
Sure. Yeah, excellent. Thanks, you too. Shanti, let me circle back to you. You really wanted to make sure that we knew about sober motherhood for you and how that was a tremendous accomplishment for you. Tell me some more about that.
Well, I never realized how powerful that is. You know, when I first started getting sober, it was for me because I didn't have kids. I was 28 when I first got sober. And I did it because my life was really out of control. and I couldn't stop. I tried to stop when I was 23. I went to my first AA meeting and I was like, no, there's a bunch of old people in here and I'm not old and I don't want to stop. And so I continued to use and drink and party down until I was 28. And my life was getting really unmanageable. Mm-hmm. So I called this woman that I knew that I met when I was actually 15 years old. I remember I moved from the city to a small town and I walked in to the art room, which was behind the school. It was an very impoverished district, Sheboygan, Michigan. And there was no money for art. So we were in a trailer in the back, all the art students. I walked in and I saw this woman and I heard a voice in my head. It said, "You're going to be her best student." And I just kind of didn't think much about it. And I did. I became her best student. She got sober before me about 7 years. And we remained friends throughout my adulthood. She has been my mentor. And she was the one I reached out to when I was 28 and decided to get sober. And I said, I need help. I'm ready now. So, yeah, I was living in Colorado then with Jeremy. We weren't married then. I got sober a year before we got married.
And Molly's become your sponsor, right?
Oh yeah, she's been my sponsor. You know, that's kind of what it in recovery. It's always good to have somebody that's a little ahead of you to kind of bring you through. But I still wasn't ready for the whole AA thing. I was like, that's not for me. Can you just tell me what to do? And I was desperate. You know, remember 4 o'clock in the evening, it would just be 4 o'clock. I would start jonesing and I really wanted to drink. And I just remember I'd call her and I'd be crying. I'd feel like worms were crawling through my veins. And I was just like, I got it. I need to stop. You know, it was just like, it was really hard at first. The first year's really hard, yeah. But I kept doing it. And I was teachable. I was like, what do you do? I'll do it. So she'd tell me to write 10 things about myself that I love. I didn't love myself. I looked in the mirror and I was like, I don't love this person. How am I supposed to write 10 things I love about myself when I don't even love me? You know, all the things and the demoralizing things I did and just all the things that come with addiction, you know, like it's not who I really was at my core. I wasn't that person, but I couldn't stop. And I didn't know that, like, that because I was using and drinking, that was why my life was so unmanageable. And that's why I made the decisions I made that weren't very ethical. And I couldn't look people in the eye, you know, like I didn't have character. I was just trying to like numb out from the time I was 14 because I didn't. Even from an early age, when I was really little kid, I'm a twin, and I always felt less than, even with my twin. Like, I felt like I was in this family, but I wasn't a part of it. Like, I'm one of 10 kids, but I was always, like, the black sheep, or I just felt different. And so, numbing out, I was like, wow, now this is it. You know, this is where I feel comfortable in my own skin, you know? Before that, I didn't feel comfortable. And I think most addicts that I've talked to in the program or through the years, they have the same story, so similar. Like, they never felt comfortable in their own skin. And so they numbed out and they found God. They were like, this is it. And then it took them over. Yeah. Because, yeah, alcohol is my God. But now, you know, I have a higher power that I believe in, that I have faith in today, that's not judgmental, that's not this like guy in the sky judging me. Now I have a higher power that I believe in.
Right.
That loves me no matter what, which is how I feel about myself now. I've learned that.
Yeah. That there is some thickness to that story there, for sure, for sure. And I don't know, you know, if Jeremy has shared with you, but, you know, my background is in counseling, and I've done my fair share of addictions work as well. So we'll see, you know, how far down the rabbit hole we go on some of these things. But between 23 and 28, where you kind of had your first, you know, taste of AA to, you know, working with a sponsor, was there, you know, that kind of quintessential rock bottom experience, or what was the thing that made you at age 28 say, I've got to do something different?
I remember the exact moment, because I had been slowly trying to stop. And I actually was with Jeremy, and we were at my sister's house, and I drank a beer. And at this point in my recovery, or in my addiction, my active addiction, if I had one drink, it would just change my personality. Because there's three things that, you know, we all know about addiction. You end up in jail, you go to the crazy farm, or you end up dead. I was on my way to the crazy farm, because as soon as I had one, I was a completely different person. And I looked across the table at him, and I was like swearing like a rape, like a sailor, like just like, and he looked at me, and he's like, he had this look in his eyes, and it was like, who the hell are you? And I was just like, it was almost psychically, it was like his eyes shot through my eyes, and I was like embarrassed. And I woke up, I was like, I gotta stop this. This isn't fun anymore. It doesn't make me feel good anymore. I can't just have one anymore. It just doesn't work. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, there was a bunch of stuff up to that, like with, you know, with things, but that was the moment. It was like this guy that I loved looked at me, and I wasn't who he thought he was, who I thought. Wait, who?
Oh, I thought you were.
Yeah, it was embarrassing. Mm. I still can feel it.
So Jeremy was your rock bottom experience then?
Yeah, actually.
I mean, the thing is I don't even.
It's a mirror.
I don't even remember that. You know, I don't have any recollection of that moment. So
it's hard to bring that up.
Yeah,
it was a mirror. It made me see my ugliness. It was like this. It just wasn't, I just wasn't good anymore with that, but it had me.
Yeah.
It had me. That wasn't when I quit. I mean, I quit later, but that was the thing I remember most about me saying, I need to change.
Yeah. And then you said, I remember you saying here that whenever that decision was made to quit, that first year was the toughest. Tell me more about that first year.
Well, my eyes were open. Like I didn't know there were people that were sober in the world.
Mm.
I had absolutely no idea that there were people out there that could drink like normal people.
Mm.
And when I went to, it was actually, I went to this restaurant after we drove down the Alaskan highway. He was a Midnight Sun hotshot up there in Alaska. And I flew up and we were driving down. I had gotten sober. I was getting sober. And so I wasn't drinking at that time, but we got, and I met his parents down in Fort Collins. We had finished that hot springs tour. We went to all the hot springs. It was so fun, but, Liard's the best up in British Columbia, right?
No,
we're Yukon territory. Anyway, that was the best. Oh my God. Anyway, so I was sitting with my in-laws now, and everybody ordered a margarita, and tequila was my thing. I love tequila. And so I was like, of course, watching like all addicts do. How much are they going to drink? What are they drinking? How are they doing? You know, just like totally like, and no one knows. And I'm thinking this stuff, but they all left like that much in their drink at the bottom. And I couldn't believe it. I just never knew anybody would do that. Just leave half a drink at the dinner table. So in my old drinking ways, I would have poured every single one of theirs, not cared what I looked like, that I would look like some freak, and I would drink it. I would have drank it right there. You're not going to have that? Well, we can't waste alcohol. Give it to me, you know? But I didn't, and I watched, and I started to realize there were people out there that didn't have to go through this high school thing. Like, I thought everybody would go through this rite of passage of having just getting drunk and trying drugs, and that was just everybody. But I found out there was a whole bunch of people that didn't have to go through those experiences.
Yeah.
That was bizarre. That was an eye opener.
And what was modeled for you and your family growing up then in terms of drugs and alcohol, Shanti?
Everybody drank in my family. It was just, my dad made his own whiskey. He's, you know, grew up on a farm. My grandpa was a bootlegger. He, you know, everybody drank. We're Irish Catholic. And everybody is just like, it's normal. Mm-hmm. Nobody doesn't drink. I'm the not normal one. I'm the only sober one in the family. I mean, not everybody drinks to, you know, complete excess. Some people, like half of us, like my twin, she can drink normally. Where I will obsess about it. If I were to drink today, my whole thought would be, when can I drink again? That's why I know I can't drink.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So since you said 24 years, right? That's what,
yeah. October 26th.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, I want your take on the AA concept of once an addict, always an addict. What's your take on that?
That's kind of negative, but I do see it. I see it in the rooms. When you get complacent or you think you have this all figured out, and then, you know, sometimes it's just there. Like if you don't do the work or you don't, and it's spiritual work, because I was talking to my sponsor and her and I don't attend AA meetings like we used to. It's almost like we're looking for something at a higher level spiritually. Mm-hmm. Like, and we're both artists. So we realize how much creativity has a play in sobriety. Like I'm a part of a artist group that of recovery. It's called the Unstoppable Dream. It's through Whitney Freya's program that she has. And it's a bunch of us in recovery from anything. It doesn't have to be alcohol. It can be food, it can be coda, whatever. And they're trying to figure out a new structure. But I found that the old structure is great. It's just very sexist. Mm. It's changing, hopefully. They're redoing the big book. Because that's the biggest complaint women have, is that everything's like so male dominated because it was written so long ago during a sexist time.
Right. Absolutely. And it was at a time when women probably weren't allowed to drink too, right?
Well, allowed, yeah, but they still did.
Right. You know what I mean? But speaking to that time though, right? I mean, drinking was something that, you know, the men did, right? And whatnot. Yeah. So, yeah.
Women were all at home in their closets.
Yeah. Yeah.
Poor kids with their kids. Oh my God.
Well, and I'm also kind of linking back to, you know, when the big book was written and then prohibition came around and, you know, teetotaling became a thing and women's suffrage, right? That's all kind of all a mash of the same kind of time period there. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so it is, it, you know, what you're saying about, you know, recognizing, you know, the role that women played through all of those times and, you know, and to hear that they're readdressing the big book, you know, to bring it up to speed. I think that's an exciting piece of news. So I wouldn't have known that without you telling me. So appreciate that for sure. So creativity is a pathway to sobriety. I think that's how, I mean, I interpreted what you said. So tell me about that. Tell me about how creativity is linked to sobriety for you and the work that you've done and your mentor.
Yeah, we're both actually working on a book together, Sobriety and Creativity Through the 12 Steps. Mm. And what it is, when you're doing art, you know, I've been teaching art and I do workshops and body, mind, and spirit, because I've also been doing yoga since I was 19. So I just, all of these, like I've always been a spiritual seeker. Like that's just like probably my number one thing. Mm-hmm. And that's the number one thing that's kept me sober, is my connection to spirit. But with creativity, when you're doing anything creative, you don't think. Your energy moves from this brain. I run into a lot of logical people, left brain thinkers that, oh, I can't paint, I can't do, you know, I just try and get them out of their head with, you know, let's just move the canvas upside down. Let's paint with our left hand. Let's get you out of your head. And when they start doing art, they're not thinking. It's like a resting spot. It's where you can just flow. It's great. I mean, creativity is the key. It's the key to peace and serenity. And it doesn't matter what it looks like in the end, because it's all about the process. You know, I try and get people to realize that I can make anyone paint a pretty picture. The beginning is always about just letting go in the process, because you're following me. I'm giving you the do this, do that, do this, do that. But your brain is taking a vacation and you're able to just be in the process. That's the superpower, where creativity is a superpower. It really is.
Yeah. I loved how you described that. And as a counselor, I was also interested and taught various expressive techniques, and exactly, you know, how you described it, and the role and purpose of that is intellectualizing everything. And how do you get somebody out of that mode? And
that's why I got Jeremy. Yeah. He lives in his brain all the time. Yeah. I actually had him painting in the studio, and it was so cool.
Yeah.
He was just playing like a little kid. And
well, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, the times that I've been a part of her, like, paint parties that she's done or workshops, it's like during times when I've been in anxiety or those types of moments, you know, it's definitely like, you know, it's magical how it just shuts off your mind. You know, you don't think about it. And all that stuff goes away.
So. That's why I want to do it for more people. I feel like I can help people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wouldn't that be cool to just be able to help a lot of people to see that, to feel that?
Yeah.
That's what I'm supposed to do, though. Spirit guides me now wherever I'm supposed to be. And I just kind of show up and do the next right thing.
Absolutely. Love that. One of the things that I've had the opportunity to do, which really wasn't intentional on the front end, but when I started this podcast, I didn't really know, you know, what direction it was going to go, or, you know, if it would take off, or just what it was, but I started it nonetheless. And I've been able to use various episodes to point people towards, you know, when I'm working with them, you know, as a coach or as a counselor, as a professor. And so I'm selfishly tapping into your knowledge here of sobriety, Shanti. So in hopes, and I know that I'm going to be able to point people to this episode, you know, in the near future. I also teach an addictions course as well. And so, you know, this could end up being required listening for some folks, but, so I'm selfishly kind of walking myself through some questions here. So I've got another selfish question for you. You know, in recent times, probably the last 4 or 5 years, the concept of what is the opposite of addiction has been kind of front and center, at least in my formal addiction treatment world. And it's an idea that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's connection. And so there's been a lot of writing and work and talks about that. So I'm wondering what, you know, when you hear that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's connection. You know, what do you do with that?
I think that's true in a sense, like, because connection to me is connection to my higher power. Mm-hmm. And without it, I feel so empty. Mm-hmm. But if I'm not doing the stuff that helps me feel connected, like my journaling or my affirmations or my prayers, you know, like yoga, meditation, creativity, my art, feeding my soul, instead of feeding alcohol, I'm feeding my soul the good things that like make me feel connected. Mm-hmm. When I'm feeling connected, my life's great, because That is. That's like you don't need anything else because you have that fulfillment. Like when you're an addict, you have a hole in your soul. It's like the bottom of a pit. And you feel stuck, like you're a tiger in a cage. And everybody that's listening that's an addict knows what I'm talking about. You're like a tiger in a cage. Your brain's like this. You're in this dark hole. You feel like I'm never going to get out of this deep, dark hole. And sobriety and learning, I mean, I actually used the 12-step program through my friend Molly. She brought me through it without me knowing I was doing 12 steps. That's what one day I woke up and that hole is filled. Like it didn't feel like that anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't know what day it was. I don't know when, but because I was willing to be willing and show up and do what she said because it worked for her, then it helped me fill that hole. And I've sponsored people. And I always tell them, I can sponsor you and I can share my experience, strength, and hope. But if I don't have experience with something you're going through, I cannot help you because I haven't experienced it myself. So I will refer them. Like I had a sponsee that had a lot of mental problems. She was also, you know, had some other trauma that I didn't have experience with. So she was new and I said, I can help you with this problem you have with alcohol, but I cannot help you with this other stuff because I don't have experience with it. So you might need to get two sponsors. You might need to get somebody that has gone through this and found a way out and ask them how they did it. Mm-hmm. And then show you the other side of that. I can show you that through alcohol because I did it myself. And alcohol addiction, you know, people, it's a progressive illness, so it goes on. And you can get off the scale early. You can get off the scale when you're in a teenager. Yay, more power to them. You know, or you can wait till you're in a gutter somewhere and lost your family or your home. I mean, there's like a whole bunch of levels of alcoholics. You know, a lot of people that come in and they haven't lost everything, they think, well, maybe I'm not an alcoholic because, you know, I didn't lose my job. I can function. Right. I get up, you know, I only binge drink on the weekends. I mean, I'm not an alcoholic. Look at everybody else around me. Because usually you surround yourself with those people, you know, whoever's like you or worse, make yourself look good, right. You know?
Right.
So anyway, I'm off on a tangent, but this, you know, no, the whole right. point is that you can get off the scale whenever you want, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah. Connection is important to me. Connection is first and foremost, my spiritual side, then my family. I'm a twin, so I grew up in a relationship. I feel like I'm a relationship expert. I could help anyone with any relationship they have because I grew up in one. I was born into one.
Yeah.
I had to learn how to navigate life with somebody from the day one and then having 10 siblings. So I feel like there's a lot of give and take in that and sure. a lot of personalities that you learn about. And I wouldn't change it because I've always been into psychology myself, art therapy, studied human behavior and relationships. Yeah. It's very intriguing. Yeah. I could talk about it all day, but
yeah,
me and Nick yeah. chatting about it.
I'm sure we'll have the opportunity at some point for sure. So,
well, I think there's one thing that I'd like to add to like the idea of connection, and I think that's something that's really powerful part of AA. I mean, I've never been part of AA, but the act of telling your story, you know, just being there, speaking and people hearing you, you know, that's like true. That to me, that's probably one of the most powerful parts of why AA works, mm-hmm. you know, is because, I mean, there's no deeper way to connect with people than knowing their story
right.
or being part of their story. So I really like that aspect of
it's important
of healing, you know, and that's something I've come to learn through firefighting. I kind of feel like if there's an aspect of, you know, the trauma and the things that that we've experienced, like through my work, and the aspect of peer support. You know, there's healing that comes from just being able to share and talk. So,
yeah. I remember telling my story in front of everybody.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think Jeremy, you know, I've come full circle on AA. So I was fairly anti-AA at one phase in my career, just given, you know, obviously it was a different camp, right? And I was in the treatment camp, and I was about, you know, delivering evidence-based treatment, and, you know, AA clearly didn't fall into that category. And I remember having, you know, juvenile debates with people at work about what AA was and wasn't. But, you know, coming back around and really kind of understanding what is at the core of how people change, and then recognizing that AA supplies all those necessary key ingredients. And like you said, part of that is the connection, and you don't get more connected by, you know, getting the opportunity to hear somebody's story, right? And then being able to bond, you know, around those things. So it forced me to look at it differently, and can't argue with it. I think you know, and Shanti's example, I probably is a common one, is it's up to the people there to extract the value from that, right? I mean, some people
there's also what's really important is the healthy meeting,
right?
And the principles of the program are healthy. They have to be healthy. You can't go into a meeting and have a whole bunch of people, like, you share from your heart, your truth, and then the next, you can't have people trying to fix you in that meeting. That is an unhealthy meeting.
Right.
I've been to meetings where I've had to say, I do not need to be helped. I'm just getting this out. So please don't try and fix me afterward.
Yeah.
And I've had to, being an old timer, I'm actually an old timer now in the group, and I have to be like very strict about rule. Like, we're all allowed to believe whatever we want to believe in that room. That's pretty cool that we could sit in a room with people we don't even have it the same beliefs with, but we can all stay sober and follow a very comforting to me, strict rules about, I share, you don't bring it up, you just talk about your own stuff, and you don't try and fix my stuff, you know.
Yeah,
that's a healthy meeting to me.
Absolutely.
And yeah, and men stick to men, women stick to women. So you don't go hitting on girls after meetings. That's been really sick. That happens often. You know, I've had to deal with that being an older woman, and just saying to, you know, helping the younger women with that, because it can make them not want to go back.
Right.
You know, it's a vulnerable time.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have strong beliefs and feelings on that for sure, because I've been through that.
So through this whole time, you've been creating artwork, and you've been helping other people create artwork, and you've been helping other people on their journeys and to find healing and to develop their spirituality. And I saw a series of Facebook posts probably, what, 2 weeks ago, when all your art got put on display on your property, all the art that you had stored up.
It wasn't even all of it. Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I love the smiles on your faces there. But, but you know, I'm obviously an art novice, but it seems to me that you are quite prolific in terms of producing art. And that's where, you know, Jeremy and I's, you know, discussions about you and about your art and about this unfolding world of Web3, you know, where we've been spending a lot of time batting things back and forth. So I kind of want to shift gears and kind of talk about that in terms of, you know, Jeremy bringing what Web0, Web1, Web2 type art to Web3. And what's that been like? Or like, what are your thoughts on that? Kind of bring us up to speed with where you and Shanti are in terms
exciting.
Of Web3 art. Yeah, excitement. Yeah.
Exciting, because I can like get it out. It doesn't just stay in my, you know. I'm a hoarder. I'm an art hoarder. He showed me how much art I have. I was like, I got to get this out.
That exercise, I just kind of thought about it, you know, because she has so much stuff around. I started bringing it out. Thought it would be really cool to take a picture just to kind of see it all. But yeah, that didn't quite work out. It turned out more of a job than I imagined.
It was great. It opened my eyes. It was like an intervention.
But like my whole motivation, you know, I first got into the crypto thing during the Dogecoin, you know, like just kind of like dabbled into it, bought a little bit, thought I could trade it, make some money off of it. But then I heard about the NFTs and what they were, and really, it really struck with me that there's a whole nother way that she could get her art out there. You know, I'm about promoting her. I'm an advocate. So like my personality is just to try to help her to get her work out. We've really honestly kind of struggled for many years to try to get her, you know, to make her art more than just something she does, but to get it out to the world to share. And I really felt like the NFTs fit with a lot of what she does. It's more than just, you know, putting her art into a picture form and selling it that way. There's the added utility of bringing a connection to the people that buy her art, so she can continue to interact with them. And and originally kind of I see it as a way to another maybe platform, another medium to show her work, but don't even know where it's going to go. I mean, it's just, I see it as a
experiment,
great opportunity, you know, with her workshops and the things that she does besides her art. I mean, you know, she's a pretty magical woman, you know, like if she lived in another time, and she'd probably be okay with me saying this, but
don't say it. Oh my God.
No, she's got more skills than just the art, you know, she's got a deep connection with spirit. A lot of unique things that, and again, I don't know how it will all come together, but there's a way to bring this art and all the things that she does together through like this new technology.
Yeah, because creativity taps you into a part of the brain that connects deeply on an emotional, spiritual level with creator. So my abilities to connect with that, with the spirit world, has been one of my greatest gifts of sobriety, of creativity. And that's, I love to help people in that way.
Excellent.
It's hard to talk about because a lot of people think that it is so like woo woo or like, you know, that kind of thing. But I feel it's helping people when I'm able to connect with their loved ones that have been passed on, or, yeah, you know, being able to do that is just another dimension of veil that I could see through.
Yeah.
That's I've learned, and it's pretty awesome. I want evidence. And when I get it, it blows my mind and it's so cool. So I'm just the vessel.
Yeah, and I've learned to let her be who she is. I still work on that.
Yeah. I think that was one of the most important lessons that I had to learn, too, was to let my better half be who she was born to be, too, and meant to be, instead of me trying to corral and contain and shape and make her who I wanted her to be, right? So,
yeah.
So you have some art right now in the Web3 world, right, that people could go look at and purchase. Tell me about that.
I'll tell you about it since she's kind of, I keep her out of the loop a little bit because it becomes, I mean, she doesn't quite understand all of the, what we're doing here.
But, she's my business manager, like my art consultant. But she,
so it starts, I noticed that whenever I would try to get her to learn about it, it shuts down her creativity. Right. So I've got to separate that. But right now we've got like her first, and she can tell you about the green Tara, but that's her first, it's on OpenSea. And that's her first official project, I would call it. And there's 100 available. There's 10 available right now. And we're, you know, just, again, it's just kind of like an experiment of stepping, micro stepping into a new thing, a new medium or whatever. But, you know, so there's 10 available now, and of those first 10, kind of like giving away a wolf pup NFT, which is another, you know, people that are in me and Nick's world, we were involved with the Wolf Den. And the reason why, I mean, really grateful for the Wolf Den, because there's a lot of things that have, I mean, a lot of these opportunities that we're talking about right now, a lot of the education and things that I'm getting into is kind of through that group. But so, yeah, we're giving away, of the first 10 that sell, we're going to give away a gift, a reward. People that hold one of her NFTs, in the way that I think that we're different than other people and how other people are using NFTs is, like, we're trying to attach these two actual physical pieces of art.
Right.
But then also, like, people that hold one of her NFTs, like the Green Tara, we want to reward them and remain in connection with those people. So, like, if they choose, obviously, like, you know, a lot of this crypto stuff is anonymous.
Anonymous.
But if they choose, they could give us an address, and we could remain in constant contact with them and send them actual work. You know, send them prints or send them pieces of art that she creates. It's just kind of like random gifts to kind of pay it forward a little bit to the people that are supporting her in her art.
Gotcha. So it's not just a piece of digital art that you're potentially offering. If somebody buys an NFT, then they can get access to a piece of physical art as well.
Yeah. You know, and there's things they're talking about. People are talking about, like, you know, attaching an NFT to an asset, and it creates, you know, it kind of creates a tracking, you know, there's the whole blockchain and everything behind it. And there's still a lot of things that still need to be figured out. I mean, anybody could take a painting, like, say we attach an NFT to a like this painting back here. You know, there's nothing that would keep somebody from, there's nothing that would keep anybody from selling the piece and keeping the NFT in the future.
Right.
But who knows? Like, maybe someday there'll be little chips or something with little codes on them, that, like, a VIN number or something that could attach to that painting that makes it more permanently attached to that. But yeah, a lot of different ideas. Don't know exactly how it all work out, but, you know, maybe they would have access to some more content, or they could be involved with one of her workshops, or get a reading from her. There's a lot of different things that you can build into these NFTs.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And then I also understand that a piece of Shanti's work is up for auction relatively soon. What's that about?
That's part of the Wolf Den. There's the summit next week. Which is in Arizona. There's a big gathering for this Wolf Den group. And part of that is, they're going to do a, I think it's like a game night type of a thing. And we're donating to Genius Recovery, which is a group. It's a group through Joe Polish. He runs Genius Network. He's got a whole story about, you know, his movie is actually called Connection, or Connected, one of those two. But either way, like, you know, so she just felt like a lot of this stuff kind of just kind of felt right. You know, it just kind of, we just kind of ended up, like, even the story of how I ended up, you know, finding the Wolf Den, you know.
Well, the painting that I'm donating has a lot of layers, like the pathway, the journey, Metatron's cube, the sacred geometry that's in there, the crows and how magical and smart they are. And people are scared of crows sometimes, but they're very smart and they work together. They're really cool birds. And then the whale in there, like, it makes you, you know, the whale is like, when you see a whale, it's a symbol of believing in something that is way bigger than you. It's like the possibilities are endless. And so this painting, and then the wolf leading the way and connected to the Wolf Den. And I'm not sure how all this crypto stuff is, but because Jeremy talks another language now, which is like, to be honest, sometimes it's a little bit overwhelming, but I trust him. And I just feel like this is bigger than us, all of us. And like, maybe we can do something better.
Yeah.
You know, and that's like coming together with people like the crows coming together.
Yeah.
The symbolism there. It's like you can make things happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, you know, the whole Genius Recovery, and they've got an artist or addicts for artists or artists for addicts program. It just fits, you know, it fits with what she's doing.
Yeah, I want to help. I want to be a part of it.
So much of what, you know, where we're at in our lives is just kind of, it's all leading us to this place, you know. And I mean, the Greater Wolf Den, you know, for me it's been a place for me to, for me to get creative too, and actually find ways to tell my story, get my story out of me, which is
tracking fire. He's a fire tracker.
Yeah, student of fire.
Yeah, he actually burned our whole backyard the other day. It was awesome. I had this awesome picture. Every once in a while, I look out the door, and there's little fires all over the place. Pretty cool.
I wasn't expecting you to say that it was awesome at the end of it. So
no, I mean, it is, because it gets rid of all the ticks, and it's, fire's amazing.
Yeah.
And he's so like comfortable with fire.
Yeah.
I'm not that comfortable with fire.
Except for the time I almost burned down the shed.
Oh yeah. That was hilarious.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I remember.
Stuff happens.
It was it 2 years ago when the big wildfire swept through where I'm at in Oregon, and you know, he was gracious enough to you know, decode what was going on for us out here, and so I've tapped into his fire knowledge for personal reasons too. So
yeah, he's good at his job, that's for sure.
Absolutely. So this path that you're on, I'm looking at the bridge right now too. I've got it pulled up, and as you were describing it, I was able to see the whale and you know, look at the crows and the other symbolism that's there. And you know, when I look at it, I really got a, you know, initially a you know, a surrealist kind of vibe from it, a Dolly type vibe from it. You're just missing kind of, you know, like the wolf on stilts and the new, you know.
Yeah.
It's definitely, it pulls me in for sure when I'm looking at it. So I think it's an awesome piece to be at auction, and I think whoever winds up with it is in for more than just a piece of art, right? I think that there's so much in there that communicates a powerful message there. So,
well, yeah. And then she empowers her work. I mean, there's a lot more than just the paint that goes onto the canvas. You know, if you have one of her paintings, you'll see on the back of it, there'll be this stuff. She empowers it with her energy that she puts into it. So
it's kind of like feng shui, you know, like the placement of objects. Yeah. You know, that's thousands of years old, and things are placed in certain places because they bring energy to those certain places. And like my art, one of my goals with my art is that they are like a talisman. So like a good luck charm. And I infuse the good things. Like I want, if you hang this up in your daughter's room, she's going to have high self-esteem. She's going to love herself. She's got the goddess, you know, well, let's say, you know, I'm trying to think of a goddess like Sekhmet, the goddess of strength. You know, there's like, I don't know if you knew, I do the goddess scrolls with my best friend. We started that in 2016, and we've probably painted thousands of goddesses. We have rolls, seven rolls of over 100 feet of goddesses, but there's goddesses that, and it's not just about like the trendy goddess, it's the energy that you have surrounding it.
Yeah.
That if you tap into the positive energy, it's just like a visual affirmation, I suppose.
Yeah.
I could say it like that.
That's a whole field and discipline called iconography, I think, right? Yeah.
I think that's similar to that. Yeah. Symbolism and that's that sacred geometry and how things, the energy of like that guy that took the pictures of the water molecules and how if people were praying over the water, it would shift. And then if they were like angry over the water, it would shift. Like that's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
so we know energy's real.
Yeah.
I want good energy out there, you know? So
I got two more questions, and then we'll wrap up here. You know, first question is going back to, I told you it would come at the beginning of our talk, was it's a mindset question. And, you know, given that folks do tune into this podcast, it's been going for a couple years now, and I just hit 10,000 downloads not that long ago. And I, you know, when it's been on hiatus, including Jeremy, people have been bugging me about, you know, what happened to your podcast? What happened to your podcast? So, but indefinitely, somebody's going to be listening to this who is in that's they're going to be that caged tiger that you talked about in the deep dark hole with a void that they just can't fill. What would you have them do? Should they come across this episode? They're that caged tiger. What is something that they can do immediately after turning this show off that will help them get out of that hole?
Gratitude. Write down 10 things you're grateful for. Mm-hmm. And it can start with your eyes, your nose, your mouth, your fingers, your feet. You know, it can be simple. But if you start saying stuff you're grateful for about yourself, and about your life, because there's always something that can change your mind, change your thinking. So gratitude's a huge tool.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Sage advice there for sure, sage advice. Final question is how usually we wrap all these things up, right? But, and especially since, you know, Jeremy is helping you on this path to Web3, where do folks, if they want to look at this art that Shanti is putting out on Web3, how can folks find you in the world of social media or the interwebs?
I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Art by Shanti.
Yeah, she's got her website, artbyshanti.com. It's kind of in works right now. We're adding a landing page for this NFT stuff. We're redoing her whole marketplace. so we can actually start accepting cryptocurrency. There'll be benefits for people that choose to pay in like Guard, or if people that hold an NFT, like a Wolf Den NFT, they'll get a discount for art. But yeah, we're just kind of stepping into it with that stuff. And there's don't know exactly what the best platform is for social media stuff.
But I have an email, so it's Shanti. Yeah, or everybody wants artbyshanti44@gmail.com. And so if anybody wants to reach out or has questions, they can always contact me there.
Yeah, learn more about what she's doing, or
absolutely, or something that this conversation struck a chord with them that could reach out. That's okay.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And I mean, I'll do the best I can to answer a question.
Yeah. And I'll be sure to put all those social links in the show notes so folks can have some easy access to those things, and obviously to go over to the OpenSea and pick up one of those NFTs if they're interested. And Jeremy, if I heard you right, that somebody will be selected for a Wolf Pup NFT.
We have 10 available right now, and of those first 10 that sell, we have a Wolf Pup to give away.
Wow!
And so, yeah, that's just a little incentive, a little bit of a give back to support the community that's really helped us in so many ways.
Yeah.
And I don't want to forget about Forge too. Forge Finance, they've got a marketplace. She's got a couple paintings on there too. Again, they're just one of ones. So people will actually receive the painting. But that's just another marketplace, and Forge is another community that I'm part of, and they're really doing a great job of educating people about this new technology.
Yeah, great. All right, Shanti and Jeremy, I appreciate you giving me a little over an hour of your time, and this was a great conversation, great episode, and I know that people will be impacted for the better by choosing to take it in. So I appreciate the both of you for being here.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you.
Well, I got to say that is one of the best conversations I've ever had with anybody about their path from addiction to healing. And I am so grateful to Shanti and Jeremy for coming on the show and really scratching the surface of probably all that there is to tell around that story of moving from that place of, like she described it, as a caged tiger that's deep in a dark hole with this void that you just can't fill. There's so much there to unpack, and I hope to have the opportunity to do that in the future. As I alluded in the conversation, I'm going to be able to meet Shanti in person here in a couple days as I am headed towards Grey Wolf Summit, which is an event sponsored by the Wolf Den. It'll be in Phoenix, Arizona. And Shanti's going to be there, and some of her art is going to be there on auction. And that's going to go back to benefit Joe Polish and Artists for Addicts. Two things that you probably need to know more about, and I will definitely share links to those things in the show notes here. And I'm just going to encourage you that if you were inspired by Shanti's story and Jeremy's story, go over to the OpenSea collection. Go buy one of those 1 of 10 NFTs, and you'll get a physical piece of art to go with it as well. And you'll also get the opportunity to win a Wolf Pup NFT. And if you don't know what a Wolf Pup NFT is, let's just say you're going to want to get one before they're all sold out. I think there's less than 1,000 of them right now. There's 5,000 total. That's all that there will ever be, will be 5,000. And some of the things that you get access to right now by being a Wolf Pup NFT holder are you can get access to a cryptocurrency tax strategy software and support group. You can get access to 10% off meat from Catskill Meatpacking, which is based in New York, but they ship everywhere in the U.S. and it is some of the best meat and beef that you can get your hands on. Just by being a Wolf Pup NFT holder, you get 10% off all of your orders there. Some Wolf Pup holders got access to Chris Voss in one of his exclusive events a couple weeks ago in LA. And really, the list of benefits is growing every week. New things roll out that are giving Wolf Pup NFT holders exclusive or special access to. So it's an amazing opportunity to get basically a two for one. You get a great piece of art by going over to Art by Shanti and checking out her collection on OpenSea and then buying one of her NFTs. And then you could also win a Wolf Pup NFT on top of it. So you can do a lot of good with one simple NFT purchase. I'll include all of the links to connect with Shanti in the show notes here, so you won't miss out on anything. As you heard, though, her social media handles are Art by Shanti, so it's pretty easy to type that in, and you'll find her on Instagram, Facebook, and she has a Twitter presence as well. And lastly, I just want to reinforce Shanti's strategy suggestion that if you are somebody who is in the grips of an addiction, one of the things that you can do immediately is to learn to express gratitude. Gratitude for yourself, gratitude for the life that you have, gratitude for the blessings that are all around you. And I thoroughly agree that that is a powerful strategy, powerful discipline that if you can throw yourself into and embrace it, and learn to express gratitude in a, it'll start out rigid and structured at first, but then it'll become second nature and it'll just be part of who you are. And I know that using gratitude effectively can be a way to unlock that cage and let that caged tiger go to be truly who it was meant to be. As always, I really appreciate you all for being in my audience, for taking your time out of your day to listen to something that I've produced and something that I've put out there. I know that your time is valuable, and so I'm honored that you would have spent it with me. And I'll leave you with this urging, as always, to go do something today that will help you get closer to realizing and reaching your true given potential. Take care, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Upgraded Life Podcast.